Hi, I'm Anik Bonet. I produce The Dark North with Paul. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the Montreal Gazette. It's the best way to help us make shows like this. Subscriptions start at just $9.95 a month. Just go to montrealgazette.com/subscribe. Live outside Quebec? Please consider subscribing to the National Post at nationalpost.com/subscribe.
It was quiet on Trecinetaire Boulevard at 6:30 on the morning of September 8, 1997. People were getting ready for work and school. A woman was out walking her dog. Pierre Rondeau was driving a bus to a jail in Montreal's East End. His colleague, Robert Corriveau, was sitting in the passenger seat. It was a Monday morning. The two prison guards were on their way to the Rivière de Prairie Detention Center to pick up 50 prisoners to take them to Montreal's courthouse. But as Rondeau brought the blue prison bus to a stop at a set of railway tracks, two men, dressed in dark clothes, stepped in front of the bus. Paul Fontaine, a member of a Hells Angels puppet gang, scrambled onto the front bumper of the bus. He leaned on the hood and fired a .357 Magnum at Rondeau. Stéphane Gagné, a member of another gang tied to the Hells Angels, fired his 9mm semi-automatic pistol at Corriveau, who ducked for cover. 13 bullets were fired. The two bikers ran back to their getaway car, a stolen green Dodge Caravan minivan, and sped away. 4 bullets hit Rondeau, who collapsed inside the bus. Corriveau managed to call 911. The brazen shooting was the third time in 3 months that the Hells Angels had attacked prison guards in Montreal. The motorcycle gang was waging a brutal battle against other organized crime groups in Montreal. Dozens of people had been killed. Bombs were exploding all over the province. Police officers were being followed, their cars set on fire. Now, prison guards were being targeted. The Hells Angels had launched an attack on Quebec's justice system. And it all happened because one man, Maurice Mum Boucher, wanted to control the lucrative, illegal drug trade in Montreal. Hi, I'm Paul Cherry, and this is The Dark North, Gangs of Montreal. I wrote a book about the war called The Biker Trials. It was a bloody, violent dispute that killed more than 100 people, that shook up Quebec's justice system, and nearly destroyed the Hells Angels.
Turf and money was the big thing. You know, they didn't bow down to the Hells, and as a consequence, you see what happened over the years.
You want to put Mum in a category, I put him in Gotti's category, because Gotti was a stone cold killer too.
The Hells, they were like king. They do whatever they want. My son was the last person who was killed in that ward.
To understand where Quebec's biker war started, we have to go back to 1953. That's when Maurice Boucher was born in a tiny town on Quebec's Gaspé Peninsula. His family moved to Montreal's Hochelaga-Maisonneuve neighborhood when he was 2 years old. His father worked in construction, and his mother was a stay-home mom who raised Boucher and his 7 siblings. His father beat his mother and the children. Boucher dropped out of school at grade 9. As a young man, he drank heavily and had used drugs like LSD, heroin, and cocaine. He got accredited to work in construction, but wasn't able to find a steady job. André Sedelot covered organized crime for the Montreal newspaper La Presse.
Mom Boucher, at some times in his life, he was nothing, you know. He was a bum, took drugs, and he was nothing in the mob, you know.
Boucher began robbing businesses and homes to get money. Michel Auger covered organized crime for the Journal de Montréal.
Boucher was a small-time biker in the Terrebonne and Mascouche area. And then he joined the SS Club in the extreme east of Montreal.
One of the other members of the SS was a man named Salvatore Cazzetta. He went on to create another gang called the Rock Machine, which we'll get back to in a few minutes. In 1984, Boucher pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting a 16-year-old girl while threatening her with a weapon. He was sent to jail for nearly 2 years. Shortly after he was released, he joined the Hells Angels. The Hells Angels had been completely destabilized in the aftermath of the Lennoxville Massacre in 1985. That's where they killed 5 members of their Laval chapter for using too much coke and racking up debts with other gangs. By 1987, the Hells were recruiting new members, and that's when Boucher joined. He quickly assumed a leadership role in the gang. He became the Montreal chapter's president, and he formed his own support club called the Rockers. That's the gang we heard about in the last episode, where Gregory Woolley was a member. André Bouchard is the former head of the Montreal Police Homicide Squad.
Mom started cleaning up his act. He, you know, started to look a little better, nice haircuts and this and that, no big bellies. And most of the motorcycle guys, when Mom got started to go up the ranks and became a sergeant of arms, I think at a certain time, it was over, the big bullies. And they all had nice haircuts and they all went to barbers and they all had, you know, and a lot of them didn't even have a bike. The funny thing is they have to borrow bikes to do their run because they all had Mercedes and things like that. And then he went megalomaniac that he was and psychotic that he was. I'm the boss. Nobody can touch me. The mayor of Montreal should be me. You know, the president of the United States should be me. That's how he was. They were so afraid of him.
Boucher reportedly got the nickname Mom because he would fuss over how the bikers working for him dressed and how they looked. For years, the mafia, bikers, and the West End gang worked together to bring drugs like cocaine into Montreal. Smaller gangs like the Pelletier clan, the Rock Machine, and the Bertrand clan also sold drugs. The gangs generally got along and would even supply drugs to each other when someone ran low. But Maurice Boucher wanted more. He started to let it be known that the Hells would be taking control of drug trafficking areas in the city.
The Hells Angels, they decide to, they want to take control of all the drug trafficking, you know, on the street. Because at that time, the Hells Angels, they had control in regionally, but not in Montreal. Then they decide to fight the Rock Machine because the Rock Machine, they were controlling downtown Montreal. We can imagine that it's the most lucrative territory. Then the Hells Angels want to get it.
Other drug dealers had a choice. Join the Hells or else.
Mom said, you're going to all sell my stuff and it's going to be my people who sell in your bars. And if not, you're going to have burned down.
Among the rival gangs was the Rock Machine. That was a gang that Boucher's old friend Salvatore Cazzetta had formed. Cazzetta created the Rock Machine as a reaction against the Hells Angels and all of their rules. The other gangs were not going to get pushed around by the Hells. The leaders of several gangs, including the Rock Machine, got together. They called themselves the Alliance.
The Rock Machine and the independent traffickers, then they know what to do and they didn't want to deal with the Hells, you know? They want to stay independent. They were very rich, they make money. They built a war machine to fight the Hells Angels.
In July 1994, Pierre Daou was in his motorcycle shop in the East End, Montreal. 3 men walked in and shot him repeatedly. 2 of the men were wearing masks and the third, a motorcycle helmet. Daou lay bleeding on the floor of his shop. Stunned customers watched as the 3 men ran away toward a waiting getaway car. Daou was a member of a Hells Angels support club. His murder sent a clear message to the Hells, and a biker war began. The Hells called a meeting of their Quebec chapters. Within a month, all of Quebec's Hells Angels had agreed to the war. The bikers started taking each other out. A drug dealer was shot in his car in Repentigny, off the eastern end of Montreal Island. A week later, Sylvain Pelletier, the leader of the Pelletier clan, was killed by a bomb that had been hidden inside his Jeep. Pelletier had done business with Boucher before and was insulted by his ultimatum. In the months before he died, Pelletier had been wearing a ring that had been handed out to members of the Alliance. His murder was a sign to the Alliance that the Hells Angels were coming for them. But not all the Hells Angels wanted the war. Even though all the chapters had voted to join Boucher, some older members of the gang thought it was a bad idea. In the summer of 1995, Maurice Boucher created a new chapter of the Hells Angels. It was called the Nomads, and he was its leader. The Nomads were a mix of guys that were eager to wage war and experts in drug smuggling.
When Mambouchi decided to create the Nomad in 1995, it's because a lot of other members of the Hells, of other chapter of the Hells Angels, you know, they didn't want to go to war. They were not ready to go to war because they were making money. Some of the Hells Angels, maybe they, at the time, they were earning $1 million a year.
The Nomads organized like a company. Accounting was centralized, and they kept a computerized ledger for their records. One group on the ledger was called Company 6, and it used to pay full-patch nomads a weekly salary of up to $5,000. That was on top of the money they were bringing in from selling coke, hash, ecstasy, and pot. Different bikers in the Nomads had different responsibilities. One was in charge of ecstasy sales, another in charge of cocaine. The Nomads would only make deals with people who could sell them at least 100 kilos of cocaine, an astonishing amount in the 1990s. The Nomads controlled drug sales for the Hells. They'd go to Colombia to buy coke and arrange to have it smuggled to Canada. Then they distribute it here and control how and where it was sold on the street. The police managed to sneak into an apartment where the Nomads were doing business.
There was a computer, and there were a cash stash of, I think, I don't remember how many millions, but that's a huge pile of money that was there. The police went in the building during the investigation. They made copies of the computer, and they photographed the stash of money inside their safe. Every bike club in the province were paying a 10% stash for lawyers and so on. That was their contribution to the well-being of the organization.
Police estimate that in under 2 years, the Nomads made $111 million from selling drugs. But things weren't going well for the Hells Angels on the street. On August the 13th, 1995, an explosion went off in Montreal's East End. The Hells had planted a bomb inside a Jeep that belonged to Normand Tremblay. He was part of a plot to kill Mambouchi. But the Hells had made a mistake. The Jeep wasn't Tremblay's. It looked just like his, but it belonged to a man named Marc Dubé, and he was killed instantly in the blast.
There's four kids across the street. There's enough dynamite in that Jeep there to take out half of the building. You know, that's how much it was. They knew there was going to be lateral death. They didn't give a shit.
A fragment of the Jeep flew across the street and struck Daniel Desrochers, an 11-year-old boy who happened to be playing nearby. He died 3 days later.
They were targeting a guy who had a Jeep and particular type of tires. And the Jeep that was parked there, that same type of Jeep and tires and so on. So they were wrong. They put the bomb in that car, and that they hit the button when the car crossed the street and the little boy was there. So the killer knew they were hitting the bomb at the same time there was a child in the area, in the vicinity. Even inside the organization, there was a big brouhaha because of that mistake.
Police and politicians had treated the first couple of years of the biker war as a case of just gangsters killing each other. But that changed when Desrochers died.
When the explosion happened and Daniel Desrochers, 11 years old, was killed, with the pressure of the population, the police obtained money and they created the Carcajou Squad at that time. And then that was the beginning of the end for the biker wars.
Quebec set up a special police squad called Carcajou, or Wolverines. Its job was to take down the bikers. Bouchard was appointed to the new squad. They investigated the killing of Daniel Desrochers.
We actually, I think, know where the bomb was made, which garage, okay, which is East End, the name of the guy who transported it from point A to the stolen vehicle. We think we know who went boom, who they found dead later on, him and his bodyguard, because that brought in a lot of bad publicity. You know,
the pressure was building on Mambouchi. Some of the people in gangs associated with the Hells started to cooperate with police, either as informants or working undercover. That's when he attacked Quebec's justice system. His target, prison guards.
He had a lot of personal bad behavior against the prison guards. It started in the Sorel jail when Boucher was pissed off of eating partitioner, shepherd's pie. He burned the house of the directress of the prison. So he hates prison guards and so on. The group, especially Boucher and his cohort, were apparently targeting prison guards. And there was discussion of shooting the police chief of Montreal, reporters, and crown prosecutor, and even a judge. So that was the megalomania of Maurice Boucher.
If you are enjoying The Dark North, I think you'll love Gangster House, the new podcast from Imperative Entertainment. Gangster House has everything. Hospital hitmen, FBI informants, a prison escape, a van explosion, and so much more. It's the story of Mike Thievis, the son of Greek immigrants and a man living the American dream with his wife and five kids in 1970s Atlanta. A man consumed by his own greed, excesses, and desire for power. Gangster House comes from the producer of podcast mega hits Atlanta Monster, Broken Hearts, and Monster, the Zodiac Killer. Subscribe to Gangster House right now on your favorite podcast player. Boucher offered people the chance to become full-patch Hells Angels if they killed prison guards for him. He chose two men in a gang called the Rockers. It was made up of people who wanted to become Hells Angels. Two Rockers, Paul Fontaine and André Tousignan, agreed. They got a third man, Stéphane Gagné, to join them. He was a low-level drug dealer in Montreal's gay village. Gagné and Tousignan headed to Montreal's North End and waited outside the Bordeaux jail. They saw several prison guards get into a jeep and drive away. The two bikers followed them, but gave up when the jeep started heading towards a neighborhood that would be too hard to escape if the bikers fired their guns. They headed back to the prison and watched as 42-year-old Diane Leving, a mother of two young children, got into her Plymouth Caravan minivan. The bikers followed her and pulled up on their motorcycle beside Leving on Highway 15, a six-lane thoroughfare that connects Montreal to Laval. Gagné opened fire on the minivan. It careened off the road. A tow truck driver who found Leving slumped over the steering wheel had to put the minivan in park. The next day, Paul Fontaine, the other rocker who was in on the plan to kill prison guards, asked Gagné if he wanted to work with him. The pair headed to the Nomads hangout in East End, Montreal. Boucher congratulated Gagné and said, "It's good. It doesn't matter if she had tits." Quebecers were outraged. Police stepped up the pressure on the Hells. But Boucher didn't back down. 2 months later, Gagné and Fontaine were in Rivière de Prairie. Remember, that's where they shot the two prison guards in the bus that we talked about at the beginning of this episode. This time, the police got a couple of breaks. After they fired into the prison bus, Gagné and Fontaine took off to a getaway vehicle. Gagné set the vehicle on fire when they were finished with it, and the fire left burn marks on his face. A teenage girl waiting at a nearby bus stop noticed him and was able to give police enough information to make a composite sketch. And a biker named Steve Bois became a police informant. He knew Gagné was involved in the shooting of the prison guards. After the prison bus shooting, Gagné went to the Dominican Republic to lie low. A Hell's Angel had advised him to go there in case he had to explain the burn marks on his face and that he could pretend that it was a sunburn. When he got back to Montreal, he apologized to Boucher for his mistakes in that hit. According to Gagné, Boucher told him, "You know, my man, we erase, and we start over again. Boucher talked about killing more prison guards. Gagné thought it was too risky. There was too much heat on them. But Boucher scoffed at that and said he was willing to have police officers, judges, and Crown prosecutors killed too. Police arrested Gagné in December 1997. He figured he was better off becoming a police informant than being killed by the Hells for being arrested. The body of André Tousignan, the other biker with Gagné when he killed Diane Leving, was found on fire on the side of a highway near Montreal. He had been shot in the head and his fingers had been cut off.
The members were not so sure if he will resist police arrest and he will spill the beans on the murders that he was involved with Maurice Boucher.
2 weeks after Gagné became an informant, police arrested Mum Boucher and he was charged with the deaths of the two prison guards. The Quebec government built a special cell for Boucher at the women's prison in Montreal at a cost of $1 million. Even as he sat in jail, the war continued on the streets of Montreal. In a six-week stretch in 1998, seven people tied to the Rock Machine, including Johnny Plessio, one of its founding members, were killed. Plessio was home watching TV in Laval when someone cut the cable. When he stood up to check on his TV, which was right next to a window, he was hit by a hailstorm of bullets. The Hells continued their vendetta against the justice system. Police were being followed home from work, their squad cars and personal cars set on fire. One of the people targeting the police was only 14 years old. Boucher's trial began that November. Security was tight at the Montreal courthouse. Cameras recorded everyone who entered the courtroom, and courthouse staff used metal detectors to search spectators. Gagné was the star witness. He testified against Boucher and was sentenced to 25 years in jail for the killing of guard Diane Leving. The charge for killing Pierre Rondeau was dropped.
And we thought we had him by, listen, you had a guy testifying, you had another guy testifying, we had everything. Everything that Bois had said and the investigation that followed, everything was there. I mean, Jesus Christ, what do you need more, you know?
But the jury didn't believe Gagné.
They had actually sent me downtown to the courthouse for the trial because they were afraid that he might try and escape when he was found guilty. So we had two SWAT teams in the court building on both sides.
Inside the courtroom, Boucher was in the prisoner's box, behind his lawyers, Benoit Cliche and Jacques Larochelle.
And all of a sudden, not guilty. Now, usually in any case, in any court case, you're found not guilty, okay? You're in the box, okay? You're detained. You're a detained person. You're not a person sitting next to your lawyer and you're found guilty, not guilty. Well, they give you a hug, you go and get your right hug and you leave. He jumped over the bar, jumped into Cliche's arms, let a shell high five. And as he came out, then they picked him up, put him on their shoulders and walked him out of the Hotel de Ville.
Bouchard also worked as a referee for boxing matches in Montreal. That night, just hours after Boucher was set free, Bouchard was reffing a match at the Molson Center. The arena is now known as the Bell Center. That's where the Montreal Canadiens play.
And all of a sudden, when they started with the, just before the main fight, I remember I was sitting here and he came down the stairs like that and the light, like it was a rock star. Hit them, like they opened the light on that thing and they all had their patches full. Mm-hmm. And he was wearing his red leather patch, okay? Mm-hmm. And they lifted him on his shoulders and the people got up and they applauded. Broke my heart, I got home there and I told my wife, I said, you know, you don't see me down a lot, you know? I said, that broke my heart. A lot of guys said, screw, you know? Yeah. Breaks your heart. You don't understand how people could actually stand up and clap for a guy who's been involved in the murders of innocent people, destroying the lives of so many young people, so many other people. Because, I mean, this guy was, you know, you're talking mass murder. This guy's a mass murderer. The drugs that he sold, this and that, that's murder. And that broke my heart. That left a very, very bad taste.
Boucher was emboldened. He had beaten the justice system. The war went on. But the bikers weren't just killing each other. Innocent people continued to fall victim to the war. A private detective was fatally shot as he walked towards his apartment outside Quebec City. The killers had been given incorrect information about him. A man who worked at a car rental agency was killed by accident when the killer, from a Hells Angels affiliated gang, mixed him up with the real target, the man who owned the agency. And Jean-Marc Guimond, a hunter by trade, was killed near his business in Quebec City because he wore glasses and drove a truck that looked like one driven by a member of the Rock Machine.
The thing that surprised me is that people tend to believe that criminals could kill criminals without no problem. They didn't realize that a lot of innocent people are hit because of that.
But a shooting in September 2000 was a step too far for the Hells.
I remember everything of that day. The whole day is quite clear.
Michel Auger had written dozens of stories for the Journal de Montréal about the biker war.
He fired 7 shots at me. I was hit 6 times. And he missed me. He was hitting for my head, and he hit me on the shoulder. And so if he had succeeded, because the one bullet went through my spine, so I was a millimeter from being paralyzed or to be dead. When I was shot, I turned my back to see, and I saw a ball of smoke.
The shooter hit his face behind an umbrella.
And then I fell down slowly because I don't want to be hit my head. Then it's where I took my phone. I phoned 911. Says, my name is Michel Auger. I'm in the parking lot, the second parking lot of the newspaper. So, and I'm the one who, the reporter covering bikers, and I was shot.
The Hells had paid $50 to a couple who operated a branch of Quebec's car licensing agency to get Auger's license plate. His name was on a list of 50 people the bikers were after.
Most of the people on the list were either killed or wounded.
Bouchard oversaw the investigation into Auger's shooting.
We know who shot him. We know why they shot him. We know who ordered to shoot him. Okay. We got the guy who made the gun who shot him. We got the girl who sold the information to the license plates, okay, to say what kind of car it was and this and that. We got all that. We know who the shooter is, and I can tell you he wasn't a Hells Angels at the time. He was known to hang around. That's it. He actually disappeared right after the shooting. We know where he is. We know where he lives.
But police still don't have enough evidence to be able to place the suspected shooter at the crime scene. Bouchard says Mum Boucher was upset that Auger wasn't killed, but he was pleased he had been hit by so many bullets. There was public outcry after Auger was shot. Montrealers organized a vigil outside the Journal's offices. They wanted tougher anti-gang laws.
I realized there that it was becoming a lot more politicized and so on. I was reconforted to see that the government was taking that a little more serious because they were putting pressure and they were putting more budget and so on. There were even more laws. The anti-gang legislation was put in effect. And because after the shootout, there was a good reaction to the community against the bikers, against that type of crime, and that it appeased the situation. I was not an innocent victim of the biker war. They pointed at me and they tried to kill me. But a lot of citizens, 20 Montrealer or Quebecer, were wounded or killed because there was a mistake.
Quebec's justice minister called on the federal government in Ottawa to toughen the crime laws it had brought in after 11-year-old Daniel Desrochers was killed in the Jeep explosion. Quebec wanted it to be illegal to become a member of a gang like the Hells Angels. By this point, the mafia was working with the Hells and had agreed to split up drug territories amongst the two criminal organizations and to hike the price of cocaine in Montreal. Police later found a map that showed which areas each gang controlled.
We know that the mafia, very influenced people of the mafia, they were afraid to have an anti-gang legislation at the time. Then that's why they intervened. They tried to convince Mambouché to stop. And Mambouché, at some point, they decided to make a peace in 2000. But it was too late. The bad things were done. And you can go back.
Boucher worried that tougher laws would make it easier for the police to seize property belonging to the Hells. He and two other Hells Angels met the leaders of the Rock Machine at the Quebec City Courthouse and offered them a truce. The Rock Machine had been looking for help during the war. They had created some chapters in Ontario, a province where the Hells Angels had no chapters at all. And the Rock Machine had asked to join the Bandidos, an American biker gang that, like the Hells, had chapters all over the world. Boucher didn't want the Bandidos in Quebec. He offered all the Full Patch Rock Machine members the chance to become Full Patch Hells Angels. Most of the people in the Rock Machine refused. So Boucher asked for a second meeting, this time in Montreal. The Rock Machine agreed to consider the offer if the two sides stopped attacking each other and respect the drug turfs they controlled at the time. Boucher agreed. The leaders of the two gangs posed for pictures outside the restaurant, hugging. The photos were published in local crime tabloid newspapers. 2 days later, Boucher was rearrested in the prison guard's desk.
I still remember it today. I was playing golf, and we're at the Epiphany Golf Club. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We were just teeing off, and the phone rang, and it's my guys, and they're yelling on the phone. I hear them yelling, and they said, "Butch, we got the son of a bitch. We got a warrant for his arrest."
The Rock Machine, meanwhile, continued their efforts to join the Bandidos. The Hells were not amused and sent one of their leaders to a meeting with the Bandidos at Peace Arch Park. That's a park on the Canada-US border between British Columbia and Washington State. The location gave the two men a chance to talk without leaving their home countries. The Hells Angels made it clear they didn't want the Bandidos in Canada. But the next day, almost every member of the Rock Machine became probationary members of the Bandidos. Suddenly, the Bandidos had chapters in Toronto, Kingston, Montreal, and Quebec City. A month later, the Hells Angels set up 10 chapters in Ontario by patching over local motorcycle clubs. And then the police struck. On March 28, 2001, they arrested almost every Hells Angel in Montreal in an investigation called Operation Springtime 2001. The Bandidos tried to pick up the Hells operations here, but Hells Angels from other chapters around Quebec stepped in. The Hells then went after the people in the Rock Machine who brought the Bandidos to Canada. First, they killed Robert Tout-Léger at his home in Quebec's eastern townships. Léger, who spoke perfect English, was the first person from the Rock Machine to approach the Bandidos. He was shot outside his home in St. Catherine de Hatley, in front of his wife. Next was Nama Whistle, the leader of the Montreal chapter of the Bandidos. But the Hells Angels made a terrible mistake. Yves Albert was driving home from his job as a Purelator driver and got off the highway near his home in Saint-Eustache, just north of Montreal. He pulled into a gas station and was shot and killed as he filled his car with gas.
They come to my house and they said he was killed by the Hells Angel. My son is not a Hell Angel.
Dolores Mallette is Yves Albert's mother.
And for a few seconds, you know, like your head's going, I'm the mother. Maybe I don't know what he was doing. And, you know, I think they know that. Right away they said your son was not in the Hells and was not in a gang. And right away they told me about
it. Albert was driving the same kind of car as the one driven by Whistle. And their license plates were very similar. And Albert had taken the same exit off the highway that Whistle usually did. The killer had been waiting for him on an overpass above the highway.
When you see that on TV, I never thought it will happen to me. Never, never, you know, like, but I didn't accept. At that time, before my son was killed, I find the policemen didn't take too much place. You know, like the elves, they were like king. They do whatever they want. My son was the last person who was killed in that war. Then it changed. I think after my son died, it changed. But before...
Later that year, the federal government adopted new anti-crime laws. They expanded the definition of what a criminal organization was. With the tougher laws, the police could more easily seize things like land and cars from criminal organizations. And then the police put an end to the war. They arrested almost all of the bandidos in an investigation cracking down on murders and drug trafficking. The war had a deadly impact. More than 160 people were killed. There were more than 100 attempted murders. Nearly 100 bombs went off, and there were more than 100 arson fires. The Hells Angels and bandidos were both behind bars. That left a lot of drug trafficking business open for other gangs. The street gang stepped in, and so did the Montreal Mafia. Mafiosi, like Andrea Scopa, started to see opportunities and were selling drugs in bars that the Hells Angels had controlled for years. In 2002, Boucher's second trial began. This time, the jury convicted him on 2 counts of murder and 1 of attempted murder. He got 3 life sentences and is still in jail.
He gave these orders in order to destabilize the justice system. And he'd have them carried out by guys who he would name later on to higher positions, and that they would never turn stool because they had killed a guard or killed a police officer. He'd still be out there if he wouldn't have started this war, because the government would have never attacked. Kakashu would have never existed. The bombs would have not gone off if he had used his head.
With Boucher in jail, the police turned their attention to the mafia. The RCMP began an investigation in 2002 called Project Colisée. Their target? Montreal Mafia boss Vito Rizzuto and his criminal organization. Next time on Gangs of Montreal.
Now we got all this money. Where do we invest? What do? You open companies, real estate companies, building. And that's where most of the corporations, if people are honest, lawyers and notaries will tell you, the great majority of corporations in Quebec are infiltrated by organized crime.
The mafia, you know, they have so much money. They invest in legitimate business. With legitimate business, they can corrupt politicians, businessmen, all you can imagine.
The Dark North, Gangs of Montreal, is written and produced by Monique Baudin and me, Paul Cherry. Additional production and editing by Carson Jurama. Theme music is by Bryce Hall. Emma Mackay is the Montreal Gazette's digital executive producer, and Lucinda Choden is our editor-in-chief. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.